Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
We just saw a commercial for the Emoji movie. And I was raising, how much would you have to be paid to go see that movie if you're not bringing kids near and dear to you? And I raised the figure, $500. Adam said, absolutely. I also said, absolutely, I'm in. Dan said,
no chance.
No chance.
Nope. Nope. It would have to be much more money than that.
So it's, how long do we think the new, did it say the new Emoji movie? Does that mean there was a previous Emoji movie? Or did it just say the Emoji movie? I just saw it up there. Lindsay, we just were talking, there's an Emoji movie out. Coming up. It just looked like it was various talking emojis. I asked, if you're not going with children that are near and dear to you, how much money would you have to be paid to go see the Emoji movie? I raised the figure $500.
Oh, no.
Adam said yes. I said yes.
I'd do it for $100.
Yeah, I would do it for like $50 probably. I mean, think about it. Two hours of your time. Oh. That's $25 an hour.
I think we've established
it's a lot more than 2 hours of your time because you're going to be surrounded by kids that aren't related.
No, you go to a late movie. No one said you had to go when kids are awake.
They're going to be having a 10 o'clock showing of the Emoji movie.
And who is that?
And that might even
movie.
Be worse, to be honest with you.
That is worse.
I don't want to be part of that crowd.
Yeah, I want $75, so I'm getting paid $25 an hour, and then I've got $25 to spend on drinks and food. Yeah. And then I'm going to a movie theater that serves booze.
Okay. No headphones. Okay, you cannot go in their headphones. And I'm saying you have to be in there with children.
Yeah.
And I'm with Dan.
You have to stay awake?
Yes, you
can
have.
Can I do recreational
like
drugs beforehand?
No. Kids in that theater?
No.
Come
no
on.
Chance. You cannot. You have to be.
I have to be clear-minded.
And then you have to. You have to write like a two-paragraph review just so we know that you actually paid attention. Because I think Dan's right. The adults who on their own are going to see the Emoji 11 o'clock movie, I would fear for your safety.
What if I do double duty and instead of just having to go, I offer up my services as a babysitter? So I not only get paid by you for going to watch it, but then I feel comfortable watching like four children. So yeah. Four children babysitting, going to a movie.
I did not say I was the one going to pay. I said, how much would we?
No.
Because I said I would take
an additional $40 an hour. So then I'm making $65 an hour. I'm in.
I don't know if I'd do it for 100. Carter, you're saying 100?
Oh, go, sure. There'd be a couple of funny parts.
Maybe when
I saw the clip with the poop emojis coming out of the stall, and they're going, we're number two. We're number two. That's pretty good.
That's not, Dan?
No.
You're smiling. No. You're laughing about that.
I'm laughing because Adam finds that amusing.
Lindsay, do you find that amusing that they came out and they're like, we're number two?
Stephen Wright is one of the voices.
What if it comes out and our guy Covert comes back from his sabbatical?
Unbelievable. It's the best movie of the year. Oscar buzz.
The Poop Magazine thinks the Emoji Poops deserve an Oscar. What would the figure
I'll
be?
I'll give you my next paycheck if Colin Covert says this movie's Oscar worthy.
How much could we pay? Does he actually have to write that review?
Yes.
Could he put that on Twitter?
Nope. It has to be published in the physical paper.
Yeah, probably $100. Probably $100. But man, Lindsay, $100 on your own. You have to be paying attention.
Yeah, I would do it for $100. Absolutely.
$1,000, Dan Cook.
That's what I was going to say. We'd have to start talking. We could start having the conversation when the number has three zeros involved.
God, that's
to begin now.
No way. I'm laying that money out in front of you.
I love how important he thinks his time is.
No, it's not about it's about my sanity. It has nothing to do with how important my time is. No. If you put $500 in front of me right now, zero chance I take it to that movie.
Really?
Absolutely not.
For $500, I'd watch it three times in a row.
I think I would you? Okay. For $500, Would you watch it while we're spooning?
Oh, no. No.
1,000?
No.
Hey, remember the list I gave you of the things you're not supposed to say to your coworkers?
Oh,
are we getting to that today?
Yeah, let's get to that right now.
Okay.
Because maybe that's on the list. How much money do you need to be paid to go see the Emoji Movie? And guess what campaign's going to start on CCO next week? The Emoji Campaign. Here's Adam with the news. Philip Stinson is going to join us in about 15 minutes. Former police officer, now a criminology professor, Bowling Green. He's excellent on stories early on when there are a lot of questions, and there's still many, many questions, and we're not going to resolve all of them. We're not going to throw theory after theory out there either. But Philip Stinson is going to join us, his thoughts on Justine DeMond and where we're at right now. Lindsay did point this out before we pause for Adam's news. 10 seriously inappropriate things you should never say to your coworker. Is spooning one of them, Lindsay? Should you ever ask a coworker to spoon with you?
Well, I mean, if you have a romantic relationship with your coworker, you could ask to spoon.
Yeah.
But
do we have a romantic relationship?
Doug, no. Jeez. God.
Do you and your wife go to church? Dan? Seriously inappropriate. What do you think?
No, that's not seriously inappropriate. I mean, it depends on the context, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, to lead with that is probably not a good idea.
No.
But if it's in the middle of a context about faith or religion or something like that, that's a perfectly appropriate question.
I don't, you know, yeah. I mean, if all of a sudden someone is talking about a part of their life and this person is looking down at them, Lindsay, to me then, but just within a work conversation, if you ask, do you go to church? I don't think that's automatically awful.
It's a little taboo. And let's be honest, it's a little taboo to just like casually drop into a conversation like, how was your weekend? How are the kids? So do you guys go to church? I mean, because I feel that there's a, it comes with a.
Lecturing moment or.
Not a lecturing moment, a judgment.
A judgment.
You assume there's coming a judgment.
It can be.
Yes.
Right? And it's not like I'm a very spiritual person. I think many times it doesn't, but I understand that. You're having a blonde moment. Carter, you're having a blonde moment. Can you say that to one of your colleagues?
I think you should be allowed to be able to say that, but in this day and age, everybody gets offended so easily, so I would say probably not.
You would say that to Susie Jones?
Well, I'd say much worse.
Yeah, right.
But.
But I mean, I guess some of this is depends on how friendly you are with that coworker, right?
It's just kind of an outdated insult.
Yeah.
I mean, that was really popular in like, what, the 90s?
I've heard people use it recently.
Really?
Yes, who are not far from your age.
Oh.
Are you going to have more kids? Is that bad? Is that seriously inappropriate?
There is some. We're in a very sensitive time when it comes to questions about reproduction, whether it's are you having kids? Are you having more kids? Do you want kids? Because let's face it, there is a trending upward of couples who are deciding to not have children. And then there are unfortunately also a trending upward of people who are having issues having children.
Yeah. Right.
And I think there's just a lot of sensitivity around that one.
You're only taking the elevator one floor? That's
yes.
That's a bad one. Right?
No, it's not.
If the idea is you're looking at somebody, we're on the second floor, and they walk towards the elevator, and you're walking towards the stairs, and then you look at them and say, it's one floor, you're taking the elevator, that's inappropriate. 100%.
It depends on if it's Carter. Like, if it's someone I have a good relationship with.
He's your friend.
Yeah.
He's your friend. All these have to be under the premise, you're not good friends.
If we worked in a taller building, absolutely.
But again, you're only taking the elevator one floor, right? That would be a, if I went to, I've known Mary for a long, long time. Okay, Mary just came. We don't know each other that well. Mary and I are on the second floor, and I see her walking towards the elevator, and I'm going towards the stairs. I go, Mary, really? You're taking that elevator down? That's
only one floor.
One floor?
Yes.
That's pretty bad.
No, you can't say that.
No.
You know what else is on that one floor that she's taking? HR.
Yes. Five. You seem down. Are you depressed?
Yeah.
Jeez. So you cannot do that. Six. You're lucky you don't want a family. All right, because you've talked about this, that sometimes people can prejudge if you're a woman and you don't have kids yet. That's pretty judgmental, right? From a coworker?
You're lucky you don't want a family. I have a family.
Yeah.
Just because I haven't decided if I'm going to add children to that family.
Seven. Here's some free dating advice. Dan, how would you be one of the salespeople comes out and say, you really don't know him and say,
yeah.
You're Dan, right? Yeah. Let me give you some dating advice. I mean, you might just think it's bizarre, right?
Yeah, and I probably immediately say, you know, thanks, but I'll pass.
Yeah. And then they might offer you money to go see the emoji movie.
Are you going to ignore what happened to me here? I won't say who it was, but after I told them, they knew I was in a happy relationship, was moving in with my boyfriend, gave me a book on picking up men and offered to set me up with some of their friends. After, well aware that I had a boyfriend.
I knew this?
Yeah.
Oh, we've talked. I've told you this story before.
If you knew who it was.
Oh, I know. I know. I'm willing to bet $1,000.
I came back to my desk and there was a book about picking up men and dating tips.
Yeah, I'm willing to, and I don't know yet, okay? Because Adam was trying to lip read it to me and I couldn't tell. But I'm willing to say this. I will live at the emoji movie for a month if I'm not 100% right.
Oh, my gosh.
I think, do you believe I know who it is if I'm that confident?
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
You're just being a fuddy-duddy. Okay, first of all, speaking of phrases, fuddy-duddy, okay? Average age, Dan Cook, if someone uses the phrase
fuddy-duddy?
Fuddy-duddy.
Let's see, how old are you? up it by a few years. I would say 62.
77. Carter, average age, if somebody says fuddy-duddy.
70.
Okay. What are you? I can't figure you out, Lindsay.
By the way, if you use the term fuddy-duddy, you are a fuddy-duddy.
That's true.
A person who is old-fashioned.
Very true, yeah.
How would you feel about that one? What are you? I can't figure you out.
What are, like, are they, this is an honest question. Is it like, what are you, like, what's your ethnicity? What's your background?
A former department store manager where she worked asked her, what exactly are you? I can't figure out. I saw your husband once. He's strange.
That sounds more personality driven.
Personality driven. It also sounds like it comes from someone who has no tact.
Just kind of the point of this list, isn't it?
Yeah.
Dun dun dun.
The whole reason. 10. Should you really be eating that?
Oh no.
Well, it depends what that is.
An edible?
It's a minx.
Pizza out of the garbage?
It's one of those minks that you come across.
Do we need to celebrate the pizza out of... Lindsay, during the break, go to our Facebook page. It's on there. Let's find out how long ago it was when Adam ate one-day-old pizza.
Garbage pizza.
This person claims that he or she uses Fuddy Duddy all the time.
No chance.
I love that you're listening. We just don't believe you. I mean, can you say that? Is that inappropriate to say to one of your texters?
Well, I mean, you've said far more inappropriate things to texters than that. That's
absolutely
nowhere near even the top of the list. But could there be one random 30-year-old person out there that just somehow had that ended up in their lexicon?
Too rational.
Possible.
Too rational. Yeah.
I'm just saying it's possible.
Adam?
No chance.
No, still no chance. Philip Stinson in about 7-8 minutes, former police officer. Now criminologist, professor at Bowling Green, very good guest. Want to ask him a number of questions about where he thinks an investigation would be at this point regarding the shooting death of Justine DeMond, which happened late Saturday night. Lindsay found this one yesterday. We did not get to it. My boss, it's another dear fill in the blank. My boss asked me if I'm willing to put up with a new employee for 2 months. Before we moved into the new city, I lived alone, liked my privacy, had never met the man. So I said, no way. Still, he was moving to New York City from the Midwest. And I did not want to leave an alert, so I thought, okay, he can stay on my couch. So, I mean, he's staying with them, Carter. The new guy was nice, not a terrible roommate, but he made no effort to find a place. At the end of the second week, I lied. Said I needed my apartment back. He offered to pay. I turned him down. What should I have done? So the person responds back, says it's inappropriate of your boss to help you ask out. The financial part, yes, New York is an expensive place, but you only have to do so much. Can you see a scenario? Now this is you're younger, right? So there's not as many other commitments. You're here and you're single. And who was your first boss? Who was running the place then?
GM?
Yeah.
Brian Whittemore.
Brian Whittemore comes and says, Adam, we've got this new guy. He's coming up from St. Louis. His name is Jeff McKinney. He needs a place to stay for a couple weeks until he finds the basement in South Minneapolis and Bloomington that he's going to live in for the rest of his run here. And, of course, that's true. Would you let somebody stay at your place? And how would you feel if the boss is asking you that? And then when the person's there, they're never looking for a new place, and they're acting like they've moved in, like we're now roommates.
Yeah, I'm not a good yielder of space. I don't.
That explains the lack of interest in spooning.
Yeah, I have a big problem with that, and I try to, as carefully as possible, try to come up with as many issues with
lies.
The boss as possible. Well, yeah. I got this, you know.
Got this illness.
Got this lip fungus they ain't identified yet. I don't really clean myself up in the morning.
Lindsay, any scenario? Because you take in, I mean, on kind heart in this room, and it doesn't take much. You're the leader. Is there any scenario? Shannon comes to you and says, the new host of 3 to 6 is moving to town. He or she needs a place to stay. We think you're the one. Can he or she stay at your place for a month?
I can't say what my response would be, but it would be a big old
bleep
heck
no.
Bleep no. Bleep no.
Yeah.
No. How, like, the audacity is just, it's baffling. And no monetary reimbursement.
Mm-mm.
You're not a babysitter.
No.
You're not a Days In.
What if it's...
Get an Airbnb.
So it's the job that you absolutely love. You do not want to lose it.
If you lost your job because you didn't put up that person,
that's
the lawsuit...
That's quid pro quo.
Oh, the lawsuit just would
test.
Just be
it's
so good.
Quid pro quo. I'm calling.
Okay, so we're not
this
at CVS. We're not at CVS's other things. And so again, Dan, the same scenario. You, so we're at a different job now. We love it. It's forward thinking. It's everything you want to do in life. Okay? You just so enjoy it. Except one thing. The boss is a bit of a pain in the butt. And the boss is inclined to fire people. So the boss says, you listen, guy's coming up, 2 weeks. You know, I know you're single. I know you got that big mansion in St. Louis Park. Mm-hmm. I really need you to let him stay here for two weeks.
Nope.
You're willing to lose the job?
Well, because if they fire me, then I'll sue them. I mean, that's easy. That's an easy answer.
Is it an automatic win if you go to court on this?
I don't know if it's an automatic win, but I got a pretty darn good shot.
It's got to be, right?
Yeah.
Although, wait, what about
it's
when you're
not in terms of my employment, you can't require me to house somebody.
But what if, I mean, what, we're an at-will state, right? Right, legally, so do they have to justify why they fired you? What are you smiling about over there?
Because this is ridiculous. It's like...
But they don't. When most jobs, they do not have to explain why they fired you, and they're within their right.
Dan's right. If it isn't a automatic win, the publicity and the bad PR for that company.
Bad PR for that company.
Oh, I would milk. I'd be on every morning show. It'd be bad.
Which show would you go on first to talk?
The View,
about?
Because I love Whoopi Goldberg.
The View. Adam. You are now suing, and all the morning shows are going after you. Which show are you going on first?
WCCO Mid-Morning.
Absolutely.
Who are you?
Jason and Kylie.
Who are you hoping are the panelists?
Well, the guy with the puppet today, the guy with the marionette. I want to have him translate when I'm talking. Jason, you out there? You hear me?
So explain what this guy was doing.
There's some puppet festival in Twin Cities. Guy comes in and he's got the marionette.
Yeah. So like Geppetto?
He's talented.
Was his mouth not moving?
And they were hard. They're trying to figure out. No, it's because it's a puppeteer. He doesn't need to be.
I don't know.
He's not a
ventriloquist. Well, maybe
he's behind.
You told me how talented he was. I thought maybe he was really talented.
And he was moving the puppet. they wouldn't take the camera off the puppet. It's like, okay. And I think Jason was okay. Let's bring this back to human world.
So would you like to be interviewed by the puppet? Yes,
absolutely.
I think that explains a lot about the show. A story that is still baffling so many people, especially those closest to Justine Dubon. What did happen? How did it happen on Saturday night? When she calls about what she believes to be a sexual assault taking place near her home, that she comes out and greets the officers when they arrive. She is talking on the driver's side. And then on the passenger side, from the reports from numerous media outlets in this area, Mohammed Noor shoots her. Confirmed that she died from a homicide. You had the very sad statement read by her fiance and all sorts of questions. So we know it's going to take a period of time. We know it's turned over to the BCA. Yesterday we had Mayor Hodges on talking about it. If you'd like to podcast that, certainly available to you, WCCO.com/Chad. It was at 12:35. So Lindsay reached out to an excellent guest, Philip Stinson, and he's so good on this particular topic. Philip, thanks for your time. Why don't you tell everybody about your background? You can do it better than I. Just to back up why we think you're such a good guest in this area, and thank you very much for coming on.
Oh, thanks, Chad. My pleasure. Well, I'm a professor at Bowling Green State University in Ohio, and I've been here for about 9 years. Prior to going to grad school and earning a PhD in criminology, I worked as an attorney. And before that, many years ago, for several years, I was a police officer as a young man after I graduated from college. So for the last 13 years or so, my primary area of research has been studying police crime. That is crime that's committed by sworn law enforcement officers across the country. And in my database now, we have today, since the beginning of 2005, about 13,000 cases where an officer across the country was arrested for something, anything from shoplifting to murder and everything in between. And as a result of that research, we were able to, when the media started asking a lot of questions in August of 2014 after Michael Brown was killed in Ferguson, Missouri, as to how often officers are arrested for shooting and killing somebody, how often officers are arrested for murder or manslaughter resulting from on-duty shootings, I had data in my database, was able to pull together some numbers and really build on that and help the conversation in terms of trying to put some context into how often these types of things happen.
What is happening right now with an investigation like this when, in this state, the way it works with the city, the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, the BCA comes in, okay, and they're looking at this. So different states have different entities that are looking at it. But when you're talking about something like this, which is, 48 hours or so old, what is the pattern at this point, and how important is this early time to just try to piece this together?
Well, it's very important, and I think that from what I've heard so far, everything seems to be working the way it should be working in terms of setting up the investigation. So they bring an outside agency. In many places across the country, they don't do that, and they certainly don't do it quickly as they should. So here, an outside agency is brought in. And there's a variety of reasons why you would want to have an outside agency come in and bring their investigators in. Obviously, the local police department's going to have to work with them and cooperate with them, but you want to have somebody who doesn't have a dog in the fight, if you will, somebody who's, it's not their employee who was involved in the shooting. So the question from a legal standpoint is going to be whether the officer was legally justified in using deadly force. And that's the question that is ultimately going to have to be answered here. There are many questions that are going to have to be answered, but that's the question that needs to be answered to make a determination initially as to whether there's probable cause that the officer, in using deadly force, whether he committed a crime or not. So that's what they're going to be looking at. And the Supreme Court has been very clear as to what the legal standard is.
Yeah.
And we can go into that if you'd like to.
Do you think that officers, and we have no idea what happened here. Okay, so that part I don't want to speculate on. But certainly it's come up in this state recently with the not guilty verdict against Officer Yanez and the death of Philando Castile and some of the other cases across the country, and you've studied this, you're part of this every day. Do you think there is given too much deference to police officers? Is it appropriate? Or do the laws, potentially, they don't go far enough? What's your view overall on that question?
Well, the best estimate that I can give you is that about 1,000 times a year in this country an on-duty police officer shoots and kills someone, and only a handful of times each year is an officer arrested charged with murder and manslaughter. So three so far this year, and a total of 82 charged in the last 13 years. So the legal standard, and that's set from two U.S. Supreme Court cases from the 1980s, whether an officer has a reasonable apprehension of an imminent threat of serious bodily injury or deadly force being used against the officer or someone else. So what happens in these cases when an officer is actually charged criminally and it goes to trial, in the cases where an officer has gotten on the witness stand and testified that they only shot someone and killed them because they feared for their life, What seems to be going on there is, despite the prosecution's best effort to put on a strong case, expert testimony that that a reasonable officer would not have perceived the apprehension, would not have perceived the threat, the imminent threat. That's an objective standard. It's what a reasonable officer in that situation would have perceived. What happens, though, is when the officer gets on the stand and testifies, the jurors have a great deal of difficulty in terms of looking at the objective standard that's the law that they need to look at, and the subjective position of the officer that they felt a certain way. And it seems when they get behind the closed doors of the jury deliberation room that it's very difficult for them to parse that out. And there's an unwillingness. Jurors do not want to second guess police officers in a split second life or death decisions that they make on the street in these types of, you know, potentially violent street encounters. So there's no easy answer here. It's a very difficult thing. Every case is different, but we do see some common things in some of the trials recently, and it's very, very difficult to get a conviction on a murder case or even manslaughter in these police shooting cases. Now, that being said, I'm not making any judgment at all as to whether a crime was committed here by the officer.
Yep.
Other than saying that the facts are, as I know them, are bizarre, and we really need to know a lot more about this as to how this tragedy happened.
Okay, so let me stay with that. Philip Stinson is with us, former police officer, attorney, then now put in a great deal of time, criminologist at Bowling Green University, highly respected in this area and kind enough to join us. Because I think to a lot of us who are just either from afar, citizens of the area, reporters, maybe even more familiar with it, we certainly don't have a lot of the details. And maybe all this will change whenever those details come out, whether it's soon or later. But it does seem like, how does it go this quickly? Now, I can go back to Philando Castile and Officer Yanez, and that seemed to be okay, something where pulled over, taillight, questions about whether this person could be someone involved in other crimes, and move within seconds of asking questions to a shooting. So we understand here in the state how fast it can move. This one, to a lot of us, myself included, seems so atypical. Am I wrong to make that assumption? Does this seem really unique to you?
Well, you have an officer, as I understand it, sitting on the passenger side in the
yes.
front seat of the police cruiser, who is sitting next to his partner, who's the driver behind the wheel in the police car. The driver is talking to the complaining witness who dialed 911, who's standing in her pajamas outside the patrol car, and the officer in the passenger seat shoots across his partner, shooting, striking, and killing the complaining witness, right?
That is exactly correct.
Completely bizarre. Can't think of another incident where we've had these exact same facts. It's highly unusual that an officer would shoot across another officer, putting that officer, frankly, in danger of getting shot. It's just a very, very strange situation. We have had a number of cases recently where there's a real disconnect with the officers, where the officer will actually ask somebody to give them their driver's license, and as soon as they reach for their wallet, they end up shooting and killing them because in that millisecond, somehow their mind told them they were reaching for a gun, even though they asked them to get the driver's license out. So there seems to be, you know, a real disconnect in some of these younger officers in recent cases where, you know, just you're left scratching your head. How is this possible that in that split second, The woman was shot and killed in this bizarre, fact pattern. The fact that the, we don't know, I guess. I have not heard what the officer who was behind the wheel, did they perceive any threat?
Yeah, and that individual has not spoken publicly. You know there's conversations behind the scenes, but that has not been, no one has heard of that testimony. Let me stay with the body cameras, okay, because that has been a huge part of the conversation, including a large part of my interview yesterday with the mayor on that. Clearly, the many cities across this country have been debating this for years, and everybody has a different policy. And we went through the long list of when is it an automatic to turn it on in Minneapolis. That's a bit of a gray area here. Some people believe it absolutely was a mistake. Others said if it was just the conversation and there was not the confrontation and moved so fast that maybe it wouldn't have been an automatic, but it wasn't on. The dash cam, not available. The body camera was not turned on afterwards. How alarming is that part of the story to you? Or are we still dealing with such new technology that maybe this happens so fast it doesn't stand out as much to you, someone who studies this?
Well, it's a little bit of both. I think I read today that either in the state or in that agency, that an officer is to turn the camera on when there's going to be force used, when force is going to be used. That's not a workable standard because, as you've talked about, these situations go bad very, very quickly. So then the question becomes, should it be any citizen encounter where the camera is turned on? Should the camera be on every time an officer leaves the station and they're on duty? And with each one of these different options, there are problems that, you know, you deal with the privacy issues, you deal with the cost and the logistics of storing all those video recordings. There's so many different things that go on. But obviously, a standard where you don't turn it on until you perceive there might be a problem here, that's just not a workable standard. But that's what we're dealing with. But to answer your last question, you know, the National Institute of Justice, the Bureau of Justice assistance, both at the U.S. Department of Justice, they're feverishly working, trying to develop best practices, trying to develop national standards, trying to offer guidance to local departments in how to set up these body camera protocols. What are the rules that they should follow? What are the procedures? And we don't have good guidance on that in many respects. In fact, the technology is changing so very fast that. You know, 5 years from now, we might be asking different questions about how the technology should be deployed. So it is a shame, though, that if the officers actually had body cameras and a dash cam and or a dash cam, that they weren't being used at the time. That's highly unfortunate in a situation like this. You know, for all we know, it was an accidental shooting. You know, that sometimes happens.
That could be a possibility. So let me ask you this, Finch. I got about a minute to go. How soon do you think we should expect to hear, not just good reporting, because there's good and bad reporting in this, but something substantial from the BCA? What is typical of other states, including our state, okay, when you're having an outside agency conduct an investigation?
Well, they want to get it right, but they also realize that there's, you know, demands for accountability and transparency. So I would expect, somewhere between 30 and 90 days that there should be some sort of initial reports made, that answer these questions. But again, each case is different. It's hard to speculate to that when we don't know the exact facts of the case. We don't know what type of lab work's going to have to be done with forensic evidence. There's just a lot of things that I don't know to give you a straight answer. But hopefully a thorough investigation very quickly.
Philip, thanks for your time. I appreciate it.
Well, my pleasure.
Excellent insight from Philip Stinson. 52 past 1. That's your Lindis Construction Time Check. Time to stop the water in your basement with LeafGuard brand gutters. Among the questions coming in, audio from the dash cam, it appears we're not getting that. We did raise that, and it appears that, no, that's not coming up. I did ask Mayor Hodges yesterday about, okay, if Justine had called about this potential assault, what can you tell me about that assault? And as she did many times yesterday, Betsy Hodges said she cannot talk about this. Somebody raising the concern, why would she leave the house if she was concerned an assault was taking place? Dan, I think many people, if two officers are there and they have arrived because you called, would feel comfortable enough to then come out and have a conversation.
Yeah, I think plenty of people would. And this is a situation we get into where people are trying to find ways that, you know, they can control the situation. Well, if I hadn't have done this, then none of this would have happened. Whatever it is she did, we got to figure out what the heck prompted.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.